about me, it's sweet. I had an uncomfortable 9.5 hours. I had a mildly unpleasant 9.5 hours. When a Palestinian here is arrested and goes into one of the many military prisons, their experience is horrible. They can be held without charges. There are children who are held without charges. When an Israeli Jewish activist, they have been arrested over and over again. They put their bodies on the line. They put their reputations on the line in terms of their community. What we experienced was very minor, but I think I can only speak for myself to say that it felt critical to me to use whatever small platform I have to draw attention to this crisis and to say that as a human being and as a human being born in this country, I have to use my voice to say that this kind of horrific violence, this starving of children, this mass bombing is completely unacceptable. It is not just unjust, it's horrific. And I don't deny that what happened on October 7th was an atrocity. It broke my heart. I don't deny that what's being experienced by the Israeli hostages now in Gaza is horrible. Truly horrible. And my heart breaks for the families of the hostages. But we are seeing right now the mass starvation of an entire people. We are seeing an area where millions lived being reduced to dust. And people of good conscience simply cannot stand by and ignore or, cluck our teeth and say, it's really a shame, but Hamas, they're so terrible. Yeah, they're terrible, but it doesn't matter. And right now what matters is stopping the starvation and the murder of millions of people in Gaza.
I want to bring Rabbi Alyssa Wise into this conversation. You've just left the Erez border crossing, and you're now in Philadelphia. You're founder of Rabbis for Ceasefire. Talk about why you went there. Israel has said they were opening that border to get aid in.
Yeah. So we came during the holiday of Passover, which is actually ending today and tomorrow. Passover is known as Zman Chirutenu, the season of our freedom. And if that is going to mean anything, it must mean that we work for the freedom of all people. It doesn't work that one people is free and another is captive. And Israel has, as your other guests have highlighted, is enacting a siege on the people of Gaza, where now people are on the verge of death through a policy of forced starvation that is in the wake of decades of an Israeli policy of forced displacement, occupation, apartheid, and Nakba, catastrophe that began in 98. So for us as rabbis, when we came to think about what are we going to do this Pesach and this Passover, when we know that so many Jews are struggling with what does it mean to sit around a table and celebrate freedom when in our names a forced starvation and a mass murder is taking place. And it felt critical to us that we do literally whatever we possibly could to support the people of Gaza. So we came to the Erez crossing, and as we marched towards it, we chanted the words that begin the Magid section of the Passover Seder, which is the time in the Passover Seder where we tell the story of our people's liberation. And it begins with Kol Dichvin Yite Ve'yichol. Let all who are hungry come and eat. And what does our tradition mean if not our ability and our mandate to speak out against Israel, a state that is speaking in our name? And I think it's doubly important because it kind of betrays the lie that Israel is a Jewish state. Israel is a state that is acting in its own interest that has actually nothing to do with Jewish tradition or Jewish values. Jewish values teach that all people are made B'Tselem Elohim, in the image of the divine. And this is not how you treat the divine.
Can you explain why you were arrested on Friday at the Erez border crossing?
So when we got to the crossing, we anticipated that we would be stopped, but it felt urgent that we try. So we were at the border, and the police, you know, were insistent on pushing us back. You know, they actually did physically push us. And, you know, to us, American activists, it felt really intense and violent. And later, some of the veteran Israeli activists that were with us were like, oh, they were actually being really light with you. And we're like, wow, I can't imagine what it looks like. For them to be even more violent. So, you know, they were insisting that we were in a closed military zone, which is, you know, we were freely walking down the road. There was nothing visible up at where we were that we were in a closed military zone, though I know from other years of activism on the West Bank that that's often what they say is this is a closed military zone and you can't enter. And so they began arresting us and then forcibly removing everyone else who had come. So we had parked our cars down the road and attempted to go on foot. They pushed everybody back to their cars. Then we were taken to two different police stations, and Ayelet and I and another rabbi were held for 9.5 hours, during which we each kind of underwent an interrogation. And actually, when I sat down for my interrogation, the police officer said to me, you know, you're being detained here because you tried to bring food to the people of Gaza.
It's particularly interesting, Ayelet Waldman, that Rabbi Avi Dabush was there. He survived the Hamas attack on his kibbutz. He's executive director of Rabbis for Human Rights. If you can talk about that, and then before we end, talk not only about what's happening in Gaza and why you were trying to get aid there, but what is less reported, and that is what is happening in the West Bank. Ayelet Waldman.
Hi. One of the things that is important to know, I think, is that the kibbutzim that were on the south in what they call the Gaza envelope, the area of Israel that surrounds Gaza, many of the people in those kibbutzim were leftists. Many of them did things like escort people from Gaza to medical facilities in Israel. They worked, you know, Vivian Silver is someone that many of you know, a woman who devoted herself to coexistence, to peace. So many people who were attacked. And again, I will not deny the brutality and the horror of those attacks. They were themselves people who had worked for peace. But what I think is boggles my mind, and I hope that I would have the personal courage, is when you see someone like the rabbi, someone like the siblings of people who were killed, holding true to their values, managing to keep their compasses pointed true north, and to say that what happened to me and what happened to my people is not a reason for the kind of revenge that we are seeing now, and that revenge does not end in anything other than more revenge and this horrific cycle of violence. One of the reasons that I did what I did, which again, I want to keep saying how small it is compared to what this flotilla was bringing, compared to what the Palestinian activists go through every day, compared to what the Israeli Jewish activists go through every day. But still, one of the reasons that I did what I did, and I can't speak for Rabbi Alyssa, but is because I wanted to show the people who I love, Palestinians in the West Bank, who I know, that they are not alone. And it is so important to understand that weapons provided by American money have been distributed to settlers in the West Bank. Now, settlements in the West Bank are in violation of international law, all of them. If you were to look at a settlement, it would look to you like a beautiful town in Orange County, California. That is an illegal settlement. They are also fringe outposts that are, you know, even more, these are actually in violation of Israeli law, though you wouldn't note that because they are protected by the Israeli government. And so these Settlers have been issued even more weapons than they already have. Many of them are now wearing uniforms, military uniforms, and they're carrying out a series of attacks on Palestinian individuals and communities in the West Bank. So, for example, small is Palestinian towns. People have been pushed out of their towns. People have been killed. People have been abused. People have been beaten up. And all eyes are on Gaza, as they should be, but the oppression and the violence being experienced by the Palestinians in the West Bank has not just continued, but it has been, the volume of it has been turned up immeasurably. And I think it's critically important that we do not forget these people. And, you know, I just want to say, like, I want to tell one almost ridiculous story.
We have 30 seconds.
30 seconds. There's a village, and this is happening all over the Hebron Hills. There's a village with, you know, shepherds, Palestinian shepherds. And what do the settlers do? They go, they take pictures of the sheep, and then they go to the police, the Israeli police, and they say, they stole our sheep, and look, I have a picture of my sheep. And then the Israeli police go and they steal the shepherd's sheep and give it to the settlers. I mean, think about that. The ridiculousness of stealing. And these are people who live hand to mouth. They live on the cheese they make from the milk they get from these sheep. And we're seeing people being murdered, and we're seeing people whose livelihoods are being stolen, and they're even taking their animals. I mean, that's the kind of absurdity that's going on under cover of darkness while eyes are on the horror of Gaza.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us. Ayelet Waldman is an Israeli-American novelist and writer. Among her books, the series The Mommy Track Mysteries, as well as her autobiographical essays about motherhood. She's speaking to us from Tel Aviv. And Rabbi Alyssa Wise is founder and organizer with Rabbis for Ceasefire. She's just back in Philadelphia. Both were arrested along with five others at the Erez Crossing trying to get food into Gaza. This is Democracy. When we come back, a new sci-fi documentary depicts the Palestinian city of Lod, both with and without the Nakba in 1948. Sounds puzzling? Stay tuned.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. One day.
Roger Waters performing We Shall Overcome in our Democracy Now! Studios in 2016, accompanied by, at the time, the high school cellist Alexander Rowatin. Waters is one of the executive producers of the film we're going to be talking about, Lod. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show with a new film about the once-thriving Palestinian city of Lod. It's a science fiction documentary that depicts the Palestinian city both with and without the Nakba in 1948, when over 750,000 Palestinians were driven from their homes and villages, their property confiscated, 15,000 killed. When Lod became part of Israel, its Palestinian residents were killed or exiled. Lod's now known as Lod. The city is home to Ben-Gurion Airport. The film examines Lod's history and also presents an alternate reality. Residents were not expelled in 1948. This is the trailer.
This tree has lemons, oranges, and grenades. Every day they would throw something at us, and we kept it as a reminder of what we went through. I don't want to go through a second Nakba.
I am thousands of years old. Everything changes. I'm not saying I want to be a utopia, a perfect city. I just want my exiled sons and daughters back. I want to prosper again. The story of Lod is the story of Palestine.
the trailer for the new sci-fi documentary feature film Lid. On Friday, I spoke to Palestinian writer and activist Rami Younis, who's co-director of Lid. He's originally from Lid. We also were joined by his co-director, Sarah Emma Friedland. I began by asking Rami to talk about Lid and why he made the sci-fi documentary.
Lid was occupied in 1948. It was the city that once connected Palestine to the world. It had the Palestinian International Airport there, also due to its geographical location. It was a very important Palestinian bustling city. And then the occupation happened, and the city was almost completely demolished. And unfortunately, the story of that place hasn't been fully told. So we decided to tell it. However, how do you tell a story that's been told so many times before? I mean, it's the story of the Nakba, essentially. So we wanted to have a special twist. We wanted to do something that's a bit outside the box. And we figured, okay, let's imagine an alternate reality in which that occupation and the atrocities of 1948 never happened in that place. I mean, how would the reality be like if it weren't for these atrocities? So we decided to go a bit crazy and do something that's a bit unusual in the Palestinian film landscape. And fortunately, I had a co-director that believed in the same idea, and we clicked, and there we are, having our New York premiere.
I want to turn to a scene from the film Lid with city planner Orwa Svitat.
In Lid, as opposed to Haifa, Acre, or Jaffa, history was completely erased. They used bulldozers and tractors to completely clear the historic Palestinian structures. The Israeli planning policy from the occupation of 1948 to this day erases historic Palestinian space and imposes their own history of this place, starting with the important historical moment, which isn't called the 1948 occupation of Lid. It's called the 1948 liberation of Lid. The entire Zionist narrative does not only exist in private, but also in public space. As a Palestinian, you can walk around your neighborhoods and see that the street you live on is called Israeli Army Street. The roundabout that you drive through is called Palmach, where the massacre happened in 1948. Names in public space, landmarks, these symbols deliver a clear message to us, Palestinians, natives of this land, that this is not our land. You are not indigenous to this land. You are not owners of your home. Homeland. We are visitors.
Sarah Emma Friedland, talk about that massacre that he's referring to in 1948. And tell us where Lid is.
So Lid is the present-day city of Lod in Israel. It's 15 kilometers from Tel Aviv. It's where Ben-Gurion Airport is now. During historical Palestine, as Rami said, it was the city that connected Palestine to the world. But now it is devastated and disinvested and divided by the Israeli occupation. So the massacre that happened in 1948 happened in a central mosque in Lid called the Hamash Mosque. Lid was one of the last cities to fall during the Nakba. There were like 50,000 people in Lid in that moment because lots of people from different towns that had already been conquered by the Israeli state had come to Lid and were defending the city. And so when the Palmach soldiers came in, there was a lot of resistance in Lid. And some of this resistance was coming from the Hamash Mosque. But there were also civilians, women, children, men, everybody in the mosque. And so the Israeli soldiers, the Palmach soldiers...
And why are they called Palmach?
So Palmach is one of the brigades, the kind of militias, that was pre-Israeli occupation forces before the State of Israel that was founded. And so these different militias during the Nakba were responsible for conquering many, many different towns and cities throughout historic Palestine. So when they came to Lid, there were many different atrocities that were committed in Lid, but the one we focus on is in this mosque. And so a Palmach soldier fired a anti-tank missile into the mosque and killed around 200 people. Of course, we don't know because, you know, as we know, the records are kept by the people in power. And so this was a really devastating moment because when Lid fell, that was kind of... almost like a symbol of the end of the resistance. And so after that, there was an expulsion from Lydd where about 50,000 people were expelled from the city, and 1,000 people were kept in Lydd in a ghetto by the Israeli state in order to keep the infrastructure of the city going.
I want to turn to the scene from the film Lydd, where the Nakba survivor, Issa Fanous, recounts being held captive by Israeli soldiers as a child.
This is me here. This is Samir al-Aboudi. He was with me. When the Israeli army took us to Damash Mosque to remove the dead bodies, the decomposed bodies smelled really bad. Dreadful. A week or two after the massacre, they took us in the Israeli army vehicles. Me, Samir Aboudi, Rashid Fanous, Khalil Abu Judub, Khalil al-Bele to Lydd. We weren't captives. We were children. Like me, maybe a little older. I was probably the youngest. They took us there, dropped us off. Take out the bodies. Pulling. The bodies were falling apart, rotted. The smell was horrendous. We'd take the bodies out, and Israeli soldiers would burn them. At the end of the day, they would drive us back home. They took us 2 days in a row.
A 1948 Nakba survivor, of course, 1948 is the time of the founding of the State of Israel, speaking about what happened in Lydd. And this is personal for you, Rami. This is your family. You had ancestors, you had relatives who survived and didn't survive 1948?
So, yeah, I'm a third generation of, Nakba survivors. Like Sarah said, only less than 1,000 Palestinians were allowed to remain in Lydd, and we use the story of Lydd to symbolize the story of the Nakba, the Palestinian Nakba, the demolition and expulsion of over 600 villages all across Palestine. So, in a way, the story of Lydd is the story of Palestine. And to us, you know, working on this film, Sarah and I, when we were shooting, not just Issa Fanous, the person we just showed, who unfortunately has died before we were able to finish the film, so also we're paying tribute to him by mentioning his name and showing this clip. So filming this, filming them, was also our way of documenting what happened in 1948 for the ages, because, you know, we want to show that what happened in the past, you know, still affecting what's happening mm-hmm. today. And what happened in the past, what started in the past in 1948 is still ongoing. So by telling these stories of these people, by documenting them, by capturing their accounts and showing them to people nowadays, maybe we're hoping people get a wider perspective of what's happening in Israel, Palestine, and maybe that would be a kind and nice reminder that, unlike some people would like us to think, the world did not start on October 7th.
So let's go to this Palmach soldier. This is quite amazing. This is another scene with a member of Palmach, the Israeli militia group in 1948. But this is, 1989. It's decades later when he is interviewed. And if you can set that up for us, Sarah, if you can set up why you have footage of a soldier from 1989 describing what he did mm-hmm. in 1948.
Yeah, so we were able to access this footage from the Palmach military archive in Israel. I had read about these clips, and Rami and I talked about it. And the Palmach, you know, in 1989 decided to make a TV documentary about all of the battles that happened during 1948, all the invasions. And so they took these soldiers back to the places where they committed their war crimes, and they filmed with them. Because for the State of Israel, this is not anything to be ashamed of. You know,
they wanted to celebrate their heroism.
They are proud of this history, right? Mm-hmm. So,
but this is one soldier mm-hmm. who wasn't proud.
I want to describe what I saw inside the mosque. There were women, men, and children in there. Some, a few, were injured, and I don't know from what. I don't know from what. A few were injured. Many were sitting against the wall, terrified, but looking at me. I remember that a small girl was sitting next to the wall, around 12 years old. She was holding her sister in her arms. She hugged her and was waving her other arm like a pendulum. With spread fingers, as if to say, "Don't shoot." And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know anything. I remember this sight, and I stormed outside. Then, in front of the mosque's door, there was a wall, and in the corner sat a local Palestinian person. I remember his face. He had a round face. He was very injured. I don't know from what. That was the first time I was that close. And I saw his eyes, terrified, confused. I have no words. I was confused, but it appeared that in his eyes, I was the murderer. That's what he saw in my eyes. Then he looks at me and says in Yiddish, Obrachmones, meaning in Hebrew, have mercy on me. It reminded me of everything that we faced in exile, the pleas of mercy from Jews through generations, and I stormed outside. I stormed outside, and I don't know what happened inside of the mosque afterwards.
That was a Palmach soldier recounting what he did in 1989, back in 1948. Rami Yunus, as you watch this, your thoughts. He is no longer alive.
As a Palestinian watching these, you know, soldiers describing what happened in, before that, and if you watch the film, you see other soldiers who are actually proud of what they did. I mean, they, you know, they look at the filmmakers, they look at the filmmaker, they look at the camera, and they describe how they fired an anti-tank missile into a mosque and then went in with a grenade, and one of the soldiers even said and what the anti-tank missile didn't take care of, the grenade took care of after that. So it's like they're as if it's a game to them, as if they're not killing human beings, and this is the danger of allowing them to keep doing that. And we need to keep talking about that, and we need to show that what happened in 1948 is still happening.
And what is the state of Lid today?
Not good. Not good. We have a population of around 30,000 Palestinians there, and if you come and see the city, if you have a tour in the city, you will see a stark differences between how Jewish people live there, Jewish Israelis live there, and how Palestinian citizens of Israel live in Lid. Poverty, it's a city infested with crime. Almost every week there are a few murders, unfortunately, and we've all been a victim of this crime, and police are not doing anything about it, as you can imagine.
So Palestinian writer and activist Rami Yunus, co-director of Lid, originally from the city of Lid. We were also joined by his co-director, Sarah Emma Friedland. You can watch our full-length interview with them at democracynow.org. Lid is currently playing at the DC TV Firehouse Cinema in New York, showings followed by Q&A with the filmmakers. The film will also be shown around the country and around the world, including the Houston Palestine Film Festival next month, the Chicago Palestine Film Festival, at the Lemley Theater in Los Angeles, and Unseen Cinema in Nairobi, Kenya. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Shrifa Bokadous, Messiah Rhodes, Nermin Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Malkoff, Tamari Astudio, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Hannah Elias. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Osbeck. I'm Amy Goodman for another edition of Democracy Now!
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
Thank you. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Radio. Burnaby.